Hello and welcome to another special edition of the Fox Football Podcast. I'm Adam Peacock, joined by Mark Bosnich again. Bozza.
Hello, Adam. How are you? How are you and the family? How are you all doing?
All good. All fine. Good. We're following the rules. Basically in isolation. Kids are at home, homeschooling. It's a wonderful thing that the teachers have done. Got to commend what the schools have done around the place. And
The vast majority of people have done an absolutely marvellous job. When I say vast majority, I mean 99.9% of the people. And I think if we continue in this way, not only will we flatten the curve, but we'll bend it back in the right direction. How's Nyla, your youngest?
Little one, yeah. So for those of you listening and wondering why Boz is asking that question, Nyla, we have to be a little careful because Nyla is on immunosuppressants, a thing called methotrexate, which is about as bad as it sounds. So, and she's just about to go, as we sit here right now, she's just about to go onto a course of a thing called Humira. And this is to alleviate the symptoms of juvenile arthritis, which we're learning about something about each and every day. And we're all over the forums trying to find out how, for instance, COVID-19 mixes with something like juvenile arthritis, which attacks the immune system, or it's an immune system going into overdrive. And obviously, reading a lot about coronavirus, or this particular coronavirus, that it causes an immune system storm when it affects the body. So we don't know how it might affect a normal person, let alone someone like Nyla. So we have to be a little more vigilant. But she's actually in heaven because the kids are home from school. So she thinks it's Christmas all over again.
Like it.
She's a tough human. So
Very much so. And like I said, that's something that when this is all over that we're going to have to raise awareness about, because when you first informed me about that particular affliction, I was dumbfounded. So I think after this, I think we should do something for not only for Nyla, but for everyone who's afflicted by that, and just to get the awareness from people around. But wish her all the best. Stay strong.
Thanks. Yeah. Okay. No, she's keeping us strong. She's a tough little unit. Yeah, it's something that not a lot of people know about, juvenile arthritis. When you mentioned, my four-year-old's got arthritis. It's like, what?
Yeah.
She's 84? Or four. No, four.
And well, that's what I mean. So not a lot of people know about it, so I think we should raise the awareness, maybe having a charity game or something like that for
it. We might do that. Yeah. We've set up a foundation.
Only on one condition, but that I...
Yeah. You play outfield?
No, that your eldest...
Noah.
Yeah, Noah.
He's on your side.
On my side, yeah. Because the last time I trained with him, it was a bit embarrassing.
Now, in those charity games these days, you like to play up front. You like to play the big pivot man up front. And speaking of which, that leads me to our first discussion point today.
Yeah.
Probably Australia's greatest player in that position in terms of playing in that role as well. Mark Viduka came out and said a few things. Michael Caine did an interview that was on ESPN.com.au. If you haven't seen it, it's on their YouTube channel in its entirety, about 18 minutes. It's fascinating because you know Mark Viduka very well. I don't know him as well as you do, but I know for a fact that when you ask a question, you get an honest answer. What did you make of the interview?
Yeah, well, what you see is what you get with Mark. The bottom line is I wasn't there, so I can't comment in terms of what was there, but what I'll say is...
The 2007 Asian Cup.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. I wasn't there at the 2007 Asian Cup, but what I will say is this. Not only is Mark Viduka one of the greatest players I've ever played with, not only for Australia, I'm talking about anywhere, but it's exactly what you just said. What you see is what you get. You don't come across people who are so truthful like that anywhere in the walk of life. So I thought it was a fascinating interview. Well done to Michael Caine as well for doing it. And I thought Mark Viduka, just, you know, if I could take a picture of him and put it on social media of what he's like in real life, it would be pretty much exactly the same. Yeah. It would be absolutely no different. I thought he answered every question. I thought there was no malicious intent whatsoever. He just came out and gave his version of what he experienced. And after speaking, and I won't say who, but I spoke to several people who were there, they all basically confirmed what he said. So like I said, there's no sort of this way and that way. I did an interview last night with Matt Shervington on Fox Sports News on his show, and he mentioned, is it maybe you think a bit of frustration, you know, maybe with the penalty and all that? It's not. It was obviously to do with the Asian Cup. He actually said that he didn't think it was a penalty, the Italian penalty against Australia. So, like I said, you know, Dukes is Dukes. And, you know, you're talking about arguably the greatest player that Australia's ever had. So, but all that aside, the most important thing when you're ascertaining something like this is the man. And as a man, like I said, he's second to none.
again, it points towards, and it seems we're in a similar kind of position in Australian football, that if you don't have everything off-field sorted, things manifest into a situation like that. And we're still talking about it 12 years on, because it's a fascinating subject. Yeah. Two of our greatest ever players having a disagreement like this, or a vastly differing view. But in 2007, just to paint the picture before you go to your next thing, that we know now that Graham Arnold said he wasn't ready for the job. He was put in there. Dick Advocaat was going to take the job. I think there's a story going around that the FFA actually copped compensation for the club that Advocaat ended up going to.
Well, if I remember rightly, and funny enough, Adam, I was actually called to commentate with Simon Hill.
Yes.
I think it was against Nigeria, and I think it was at Craven Cottage, and that was 2007. Hmm. And I obviously met everyone, said hello to everyone and all that, and that was around the time. So that was, and this would have been, I would have thought, after. It would have been late 2007. I'll check that later on. People can check who's listening to this. It was after the Asian Cup, and Dick Advocaat had turned around and basically said he was going to stay with Russia. I'm quite certain that was
Zenit St. Petersburg.
Russia, Zenit St. Petersburg. That's correct, yeah. So we'll have to check all the dates and so forth. But in terms of, look, and he said that about, he said that, when I say he, I mean Mark Viduka said that Graham Arnold had done very well since, but at that time, just like Graham Arnold had said that he wasn't ready. But once again, just to touch on your first point, that was a very, very good point that you make. When you have a team at the top level, say a team that's, you know, that's an excellent side, no doubt about it, it was an excellent side, but it was one that everybody had to be pretty much at their best, because to play at the level that they did, they had to have pretty much everyone playing at that type of level. You're 100% right. The little bits of difference, the little things that people would probably not normally take any notice of when you're winning 5-6-0.
Or not associate with anything that happens on field.
They make a huge difference at the very, very top. So if you look at, say, they had that wonderful night in November 2005, then that wonderful time at the World Cup in 2006. By 2007, obviously, things had started to fray, for whatever reason that may be. I came back in 2008, I was before that game in London against, I think it was Nigeria, yeah? Yeah, it was John Boltby and Phil Wolanski who came to meet me and was speaking about the team and all that, and understandably, how proud they were at that stage. But I just sensed the feeling that, you know, and when I came back and I saw it for myself, that maybe everything wasn't so hunky-dory as it had been. Now, when I watched the team from 2008 to 2010, I can remember saying on the commentary to Paul Trimboli and to Ange Postecoglou at the time, you know, because I was sort of saying they were a little bit disappointed the way the team were tracking at that stage. I remember saying to them, look, you've got to understand, that was my observation, whether it was right or wrong, it's only up for people to decide for themselves, that team had sort of were heroes for Australian football. They'd done so well, and it was very, very difficult at that time, because the whole thing with the Australian football and all that had really stemmed from that epicenter, if you want to call it, that's a popular word these days, of that side. So I said, you know, to start really, you know, especially publicly, when we're obviously working for Fox, to start really sort of having massive digs before that World Cup, I just didn't think that was appropriate at that time. However, coming back to your original point, we then saw in 2010 at the World Cup that they weren't quite the same. Now, a lot of people will turn around, and rightly so, and I've said this before to people before. I've said this, I think it was to Richard Hines once before when we were talking about, it was actually in public on Twitter. 2010, they still got 4 points. 2006, and you know, I'm talking about little details. 2006, how many points did they get?
Four.
Only went out on goal difference, but those are the little differences that can happen. And also, obviously, when you're looking at 2010, some of the players, including Mark Viduka, who wasn't there. I mean, I don't think, like I said, at that time, Australian football could ill afford to be doing without players of that type of calibre.
Have you ever been involved in sides? Have you seen it with your own eyes? Mm. And Mark Viduka just came out with a flat answer and said, I reckon some of the boys were more concerned about what was happening off field and business interests and furthering their career off the park as much as on the park. Have you seen that manifest itself in a team environment and be detrimental to what you're trying to do?
Yeah, not in a team environment. Obviously, for the national team, people got to understand as well, it's very, very different. And all these little subtleties sometimes can be a little bit confusing for people, but just, you know, when you're looking at these type of things, just try it. Try your darndest to have a look and say, okay, it's a national team. okay? They were the, so far as everyone, oh, I wasn't here again, but so they were the talk of the country, right?
Oh, yeah.
All
yeah.
right, so you've always told
overnight
me.
Overnight superstars.
Well, there yeah. you go. So, and I remember, you got to remember as well, a lot of these boys, not all of them, you know, you can take, I mean, you know, you look at Mark Viduka, so he played for the top team in Croatia. He played for the top team in Scotland. He came over and was playing for one of the top teams and the biggest clubs in terms of Leeds United. So it's a little bit different to say, you know, say if you're talking about, say, someone, I don't know, if you say Tim Cahill, you know, and this is no disrespect to him, but he come from Millwall, you know, no disrespect, and he done a wonderful job there. And this is not disrespectful to Millwall whatsoever, but they were not the top team in England. He went to Everton, very good side, but they weren't the top team. So just using that as a broad example so people know, then all of a sudden you have this sort of thing thrust upon you, this superstardom, and rightly so for what they did. Then sometimes people handle it in different ways. That's all. And it's very, very difficult, like I said, from the outside to start throwing stones and say, well, this and that and the other. It's up to the people on the inside to pull everyone into line. Now, if players can't pull into each other into line, then it's up to the manager and the management around to try to pull them into line. But, I could imagine, like I said, I was very fortunate. So the teams that I played with always had strong characters inside that side who, you know, the more experienced ones who rightfully would have a go, but you're with those players day in, day out.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're, say, for example, you know, Mark Viduka, and something sort of is going awry inside the camp, and you know from your experience, and or if you're like Harry Kuehl, who played with top teams as well, and you know from your experience that this is not the right thing to go on, is it really worth you making yourself unpopular with a lot of people by actually standing up and saying this is wrong, and this, that, knowing that in 3 or 4 days' time you're going to go back to your club side anyway?
Yeah.
Majority of players saying, like, I don't come to the national team to have to deal with this type of stuff. Really, it's down to the manager. But then if you've got a manager or the management as well, the management might be trying hard as well, but they don't want to undermine the manager in front of everyone. If you've got the manager turning around and saying, well, that's their problem.
Yeah.
Then what do you do, Adam? Yeah? What do you do?
You played, you were involved in one of the greatest setups in modern professional football, especially at a club level, in Manchester United twice. Mm. And you saw a young guy by the name of David Beckham come through. And when, by the time you got back there, he was David Beckham world superstar. Now, that guy, more than any other footballer perhaps in history, had things going on off the park in terms of a business sense or furthering or forging a different style of career than elsewhere. Did you ever see it manifest itself in a detrimental way to Manchester
United? Never. Not in my time then.
And that was because of Fergie, he jumped on it?
Yeah, and because of the rest of the boys all around.
And the type of character that David Beckham was.
And the type of character that David Beckham was as well. You would never know. Just say, for example, that I come from planet Jupiter, right?
Well, I've...
like, you know, it's a debatable fact, as you said. And arrived there at Manchester United like I did in 1999, not knowing anything that was going on and this, that and the other, you would not have a clue. Because you were there, and you were there to do one thing, and that was to win football games.
Yeah.
Okay, and to win football games, you've got to prepare very, very well as well. And it would never. I mean, and again, like
so
I said,
everyone left it at the front gate, whatever was going on.
Absolutely, complete. Well, you had to. You had to, but for your own sake as well. Very rarely that Fergie would have to sit down and sort of say, "Hey, hang on a minute." You know, you might need permission for certain things. I mean, there's certain things that go on, right? Say, for example, you know, okay, at right this moment in time, if, I don't know, what's that show called, Adam? That's I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here in the Jungle.
Yeah.
Right, so I don't know.
They came in for you one time.
Well, okay, yeah, all right. So I'm using the example. So they came in for me, first point of call. I'm like, okay, well, I'll think about it. First point of call, I go directly to Fox.
Head honcho.
Straight away. Yeah? And they turn around and say yes or no. And then you just abide by that. There is a hierarchy, in my opinion, in any type of workplace, whether that be official or unofficial, but there is a hierarchy. And the smoother the workplace is run, the more people that listen to the hierarchy and trust. But when you're coming back to make that comparison, like I said, and please people, like I said, you know, think about that situation. You're coming with a national team.
Yeah. Different
from other team. Five days, 6 days. Do you really have, you hardly have any time to train. I mean, that's one of the challenges of international football.
Mm.
So if that stuff is going on and all that, you know, for somebody to turn around and go, oh, I'm going to stand up and go, well, this is wrong. You might do that, but it might cause an argument and then you have a bad result. And then it's like, you know, was that really worth it?
It snowballs. One last one on the Viduka interview.
Mm.
should Chris Nicu or James Johnson be picking up the phone to Mark Viduka and saying, we want you to help somehow, let's talk?
Oh, I think they will. Yeah, I think they will, no doubt about that. You know, and just to clarify as well, so people know, you know, Harry Kewell was offered to go to the AIS, but he decided to go to Leeds. I think, and this is from Steve Darby on Twitter, he used to be involved heavily in Australian football. I think he's somewhere in Asia right this moment in time. I think Tim Cahill could not at that time because technically he wasn't an Australian player. Yeah,
because he played just for Samoa as a 14-year-old.
But yeah, 100%. When this is all over, the COVID-19 thing, and we get through the end of the tunnel, there's no reason why not. But you know, at this moment in time, I think you'll find, especially James Johnson, it's got enough on his plate to worry about. But you're talking about I mean, and I spoke to Mark probably, I don't know, it was about 3 weeks ago, about coming over for the Football for Fires, and you know, and I asked him, you know, would you come over? And he said, look, then Mark being Mark, turned around and said, look, listen, I'm telling you straight, I doubt it, but you know, thanks for asking, but you know, I really doubt that I will come over. And me being me, as you know me, I said, well, I'm going to keep ringing you, buddy.
You've got more time to go at him now. It's been delayed.
But anyway, and I think he was in the car at the time, but you have to ask him. I don't know if he's in the car. But then I thought, you know, as I got the feeling that maybe he had to go, but he asked the question about how's Australian football tracking. And I sort of gave him my reply. And he stayed on the phone then, and with great passion, for close to an hour and a half. He cares deeply, not only about football in itself, he cares deeply about football, but he cares deeply, very deeply about Australian football.
Well, he's the type of character who will put the cause before himself.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, there are plenty of characters like that. There's no doubt about that. But he's, the type of character that, well, you heard what you heard. And I knew that from the AC Milan one. I knew about that. Sir Alex Ferguson very rarely asked me about anyone. He was one of the players he asked me about. When he used to ask me about players, it was either because something had happened a little bit way-woe,
yeah,
that was one side, or because he was interested in signing them. And he doesn't ask about anyone. And you saw, you know,
was he one of the few Australians that he asked about?
Yes, very, very few. And you know, AC Milan were willing to pay that type of, you know, that type of money. That was a hot rumor going around at the time. Everyone knew that. And you've heard what people have said about him before. We all know about that. And the thing is, you know, as your career finishes, your value as a player will never diminish, and what he's achieved, but your value as a man and as a person is so important. And for me, like I said, he's one of the most outstanding men that you'll ever meet in any walk of life.
I hope we hear from Lucas Neal one day soon. And it's totally up to Lucas. I'm involved with a club on the northern beaches of Sydney where I go and train with kids three times a week, and you look up and there's the Lucas Neal stand. His dad is involved in the club, lovely bloke, Ed as well. Haven't broached the subject with him, but I'd love for Lucas to somehow be involved in Australian football. And whether or not this is the catalyst of what Mark Viduka said about him, and now he has to come out and try and give his side of the story, that's totally up to him. But in some way, shape or form, a guy like Lucas Neal would be an asset to Australian football somewhere.
I think there's no doubt about that, Adam. And I must say, his father, Ed, and Lucas stayed at my apartment in Manchester when I was at Manchester United.
When he was a kid?
Yeah, for probably about a week and a half. He wasn't a kid. I wouldn't say he was a kid back then. But he stayed for about a week and a half. That was about 99. Yeah, they stayed at my place, at my flat in Manchester.
Yep.
And also there was a situation where I put myself, I wouldn't say at risk, but I went down on his behalf around the corner where I lived in Knightsbridge in London, was that wonderful restaurant, as you know, called Scalini's, which I've sent you to many a time, which do the best...
You've got your own table there.
Do one of the best veal milanaises, schnitzel, if people don't know what veal milanaise is.
Was that where you saw Jack Nicholson that time?
No, it wasn't that. It was a breakfast place, yeah.
We'll get to that story in another edition.
He was deciding whether or not to sign with his agent, okay? So he said, would you come? And I said, of course I'll come down. I've always felt a bit of, you know, paternal thing for all young Australian players, you know, even when the PFA used to ring them about, you know, what are they like in terms of granting them a work permit, I always, you know, stand up for them. And I went down there, and who was there was this agent he was thinking about signing with. There was a young lady there as well. And there was also another agent who was the agent of my manager, Claudio Ranieri. Okay, his name escapes me right now, but it'll come back to me. So I basically went down and sort of put myself a little bit in harm's way for him, which I would do again, no problem. So I wouldn't do that, you know, for anyone. There's no doubt about that. Like I said, it's there's no doubting. And, you know, we've tried to contact him. Let's not go into detail why, but we've tried to contact him, haven't we, Adam? You know, so
yeah.
And it's been nigh impossible. You know, people who knew him even closer, I've asked, you know, could they get in contact with him? They said no. So the bottom line is, and coming from a position of experience, that when you go away for a while, which I did for a while, you know, but that was obviously for a completely different reason. But we'll get into that maybe one day. If this continues for a year, I'll promise you we'll get into that.
Run out of things to talk about.
You do things when you're good and ready. Yeah? Yeah. The best thing we could always hope for is his health, and that everything's all okay. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, to another subject.
Yes.
Where are we at with the A-League and the Premier League? I know with the A-League, I think it's like a couple of weeks.
April 22nd, 2 weeks. Okay, so yeah, so April 22nd, there will be another meeting between all the powers that be to decide whether or not the season can continue, whether or not that date has to be put back. The way things are looking right now, they're looking better, as we know that. Me, I'm an eternal optimist. I'd like to think that we could. However, in reality, normally things are different. We'll be guided by the government. And that's exactly what we've been guided by throughout this. And if we listen to the government, we will come out the end of this tunnel, and that goes for everyone. So that will be that will be another decision coming on April 22nd. We'll see how things track over the next couple of weeks in terms of the virus. In terms of the Premier League, they've obviously, FIFA have, they originally extended the possibility of playing out all the seasons. They did that quite some time back, but they've actually left it to the individual leagues. We've already seen some leagues cancel the league. Belgium comes to mind just straight off the top of my head, and make people champions. I would have the same attitude in terms of England.
Give Liverpool the crown?
No. I would have the same attitude right this moment in time. And for all those Liverpool supporters listening, don't think, if it comes to the fact that the season has to be null and void, I don't see any reason why you can't award Liverpool the crown, unless there's something legal or that, because there are so many points ahead. I think it wouldn't be fair to not award them the crown. But I'd like to see if they could try to finish the season. Now, they've already talked about maybe, you know, a la Wayne Bennett. And for those who are listening and don't know Wayne Bennett, he's one of the great rugby league coaches of all time. He suggested for rugby league here that everybody congregate in an area up in Queensland and play all the games. That's what's been suggested for the Premier League in terms of congregating perhaps in the Midlands. It's an area I know very well. It's obviously where Birmingham is. And to play out the games. I think you have to be in this situation open to all ideas. You really do. Either way, it's like I said to you, it's going to be very, very difficult for all leagues to make their decisions. And the last thing that you want out of all this is to end up in a courtroom later on in the year to try to decide things. And that's what everyone, I think, would be trying to avoid. I hope so, anyway.
What we do know is that, for instance, Matt Ryan is in day three or four of a hotel 14-day quarantine.
Spoke to him yesterday, yes.
So I wouldn't imagine it's coming back anytime soon if he's taken that decision to come out here and
he's obviously staying in shape. He's in quarantine. So I said to him, if he needs anything, I'm just walking distance away. And he said thank you very much.
Did you see his Instagram story, by the way?
I did.
Did it inspire you in any way?
Yeah, always. Always the sports people inspire me. I also turned around and said, I do have a friend who's in the crane business. And if you don't want to come down and get your food by the concierge, that he will lift me up in the crane and I'll pass it through the window. That was only a joke, everyone. He's in good spirits. And they've been given off at Brighton, he said, till May 1st.
Yeah.
And hopefully when he's out of quarantine, we'll maybe be able to do one of these with him, Adam. That'll be absolutely outstanding. But, you know, he's in as much, you know, uncertainty as we all are. They all want to finish the season. The other thing as well that people have got to take into consideration is there's one thing doing exercises at home. There's another thing going out in the park. Now, we saw overnight as well, John Grimaud, is one of the best agents, footballing agents here in the whole of Australia. We saw him tweet last night that Bayern Munich have started to train in groups of 10. So you need, as a player, a minimum of 2 weeks to get into any type of shape, especially when I say shape, I mean match shape, especially if you're going to talk about playing those games pretty much once every 2 days.
Mm.
So that is going to be a true test, because the last thing you would want, I would assume anyway, just say, for instance, right, we're going to finish the whole season in June. We're talking about a Premier League here, but we're going to play every 2 days. Well, imagine after a week and a half, you've got about 18 players injured. You know,
awesome.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're going to have to start asking for ball boys and everything and all that, yeah?
Liverpool,
mm.
Has their club image been tarnished by what happened over a 24-hour period where they said they were going to put all their non-playing staff on the government subsidy?
Well, I spoke about this on Sky News UK last night. Look, very, very easy, especially from us from this distance away, to throw rocks. And I think in this situation, it's very, very difficult to ascertain. People can always swing one way or the other, what's right and what's wrong. I think at the end of all this, I think you know, we'll be able to look back, as we always do with hindsight, and say, well, that was right and that was wrong. But that's everyone always does that. And, you know, hindsight doesn't make for a great historian. It might make for if we'd known that. But, you know, as a historian, you got to look at the facts. People in this situation are going to do what they think is right for themselves. Now, what we've found out is that Liverpool have turned around and changed their mind. So well done to them.
Mm.
And in terms of, you know, people say, oh, they've been shamed into it. Yeah, I don't know. But whether they've been shamed into it or not, they're doing the right thing by changing their mind. Okay? So, you know, at the beginning of it, and I said this on Sky News UK, you know, it, from the outside, it doesn't look like it was the correct decision. But who are we? You know, who are we to know exactly what's going on the inside and what the thinking is, what's behind everything and all that? It's very, very easy, like I said to you, to judge right this moment in time. But the bottom line is, the caveat to the whole story is that they've turned around and changed their mind, and that's a wonderful thing. And just a little thing on that as well, so people know. During this situation, the economic side is obviously a massive consideration. It's nowhere near health, but it's a massive consideration down the line, and it has to be. Doing things publicly, for me, is the only thing that you can probably say for definite is a big no-no. Okay, now a lot of people might turn around and say, yeah, but you know, people are taking advantage and this, that and the other. Okay, you know, each situation is different, but if you can keep things behind closed doors, I think, you know, it's the appropriate thing to do, especially when people are dying in the numbers that they are in the UK at this moment in time. We've already seen Gareth Southgate, my ex-teammate, he's taken a cut, a 30% cut. Yep. Some footballers are doing some great things. Two other ex-teammates of mine who are in a hotel in Manchester, Gary Neville and Ryan Giggs, have given their hotel for free away to NHS staff. Manchester United players have taken a 30% cut. The Glazers, who in the past have come under, you know, severe criticism, have given £20 million towards the NHS. There are players doing things left, right and centres. There are things in the works for players to do things, not only here, but especially in the UK as well. So before people start painting them with a broad brush, you've got to look at the full picture. And also, you know, give people not only time, but also the ability to change their mind like Liverpool have done. And I said, everyone is different. And, you know, at the end of the day, whatever we all do individually, whether that be social distancing like we should, and that during this period, will reverberate for a long time. But the ultimate thing, and I said this before, Adam, when we had the appeal situation with the fans here in this country, you know, was it 3 or 4 years ago now? And I said that at that time, and I think, you know, it's really relevant for right now. Fans, as hard as it may seem, they can, if they have to, do without football, but football cannot do without its fans.
Yeah, exactly. And you love that one, don't you? I just come back to your point about what happens now will be remembered for a while and how people act. I won't get you to comment on this, but I'll just say the name Kyle Walker. And
well, to be fair, and you know, that's another club, you know, when people turn around and say this, that, they have, you know, Melbourne City, they're playing all their players and staff. Manchester City, they're playing all their players and staff. Kyle Walker, okay, it was wrong. He came out, he apologised profusely. And the club will deal with that internally, but we all know, and so will Kyle, and Jack Grealish the same. Okay, but they both know, you know, everyone makes mistakes, no more than myself, and I know that, but they've come out and they've apologised. Does it make it better? For me, it does. I mean, let's have a look if they didn't come out and apologise. Yeah. It doesn't take away what they've done, okay, but they've apologised, okay, well, and apologised immediately. So just bear that in the back of everyone's mind.
Yeah. If you don't know the story, look it up. But Kyle probably, on second thought, might have readjusted his thinking when he made that decision to invite two people that he hadn't met before, but he really wanted them to come round. Anyway, quick one on the A-League. Should the A-League investigate a quarantine zone to play out the remainder of the season?
Well, they already have. You know, that was the idea before the state. That's another thing we've got to take in consideration. So many things to take in consideration, Adam. Before the borders were closed, before the incident at Bondi and the incident with the cruise ships, that was the idea, to get everybody here in New South Wales to finish the season. So it's already been investigated. And but after that, and the fact that the borders were closed, it made it nigh impossible. Obviously, the medical advice had gone to a different level as well. Yep. So that's why it was postponed in the end. But of course they should, and I'm sure that they will. Whether or not it can eventuate or not, you know, we really don't know. This is a day-to-day, hour-by-hour thing. But we just have to have every contingency in place to see if we can finish off the season.
We'll get to your questions in a moment. We're about the halfway stage of the Fox Football podcast with Mark Bosnich and myself, Adam Peacock. But now we're going to do something special. And Bos is going to do this each and every time that we do one of these podcasts. He's going to give us a best 11. And today's subject, Bos, for your best 11, or your theme, if you like, is your best Socceroos 1980s 11.
Yeah. Well, I've had a long think about how we should do all this, Adam.
You've got plenty of time to think.
I know, but I've come up with this. You know how I always like to involve the fans, coming back to my point that football can't do without fans as well. So what we're going to do is this. I started watching football. My first real memory was the Socceroos versus the New York Cosmos at the old showground. Now, that was in 1979. That was for me an amazing night because we all went there. With great anticipation. There were some fantastic players playing for the Cosmos. Franz Beckenbauer comes to mind straight away. And there were so many queues outside in the end that the authorities let us all through. And we actually sat on the sidelines, would you believe?
Oh, yeah.
Now, the official crowd attendance, I think, was something like 45,000. But I reckon it was closer to 60,000 because of the amount of people that allowed. And it was fantastic. The Socceroos end up winning.
Who'd you go with?
Mum and Dad and my sister. And the Socceroos end up winning. I think it was Tony Henderson who scored the winner. I think Jimmy Rooney got the first goal. And it didn't kick off my love affair because my love affair had already started playing soccer at home with my father and my sister, and obviously friends and all that. But it sort of kicked off my sort of love affair with Australian football going live. So I had that wonderful period in the 80s before I left in 88 where I could go and watch. You know, I used to support Marconi and then Sydney Croatia after that. And I could support and watch and in some cases train with these players. I was very, very fortunate to be able to train. From the age of 12, I was training with Marconi. And then when I went to Sydney, Croatia at 14, I was training with them as well. And that was down to Ron Corrie, who let me train basically with the first team goalkeepers and the first team. So what I'm going to do is, coming back to my thing about fans and that as well, I'm going to say a whole bunch of players. And what I want them to do, whether it be on social media, I have to be on social media, is to give me what their votes are. I'll have my votes eventually, but to give me what votes. So I've been going through the last couple of days a whole bunch of players who spring to mind. Anyone I miss out, please put them in your votes as well.
Yeah.
So goalkeepers I've got, and he was goalkeeping that night. I ended up training with him at Sydney Croatia in the end, was Greg Woodhouse, outstanding goalkeeper. Terry Greedy, Jeff Olver, and Tony Franken. Okay. From a defender's point of view, I've got Paul Carter, Tony Henderson, John Paul DeMarini, Steve O'Connor, David Radcliffe, Charlie Yankos, Alex Tobin, Graham Jennings, Alan Davidson, and Robbie Dunn. Midfielders, I've got Jimmy Rooney, Peter Tredenick, Peter Raskopoulos, Murray Barnes, Peter Katholis, Kenny Murphy, Oscar Crino, the late Ian Gray, bless his soul, late Joey Watson, bless his soul, Robbie Slater, although he'll become more prominent, I would have thought, in the 90s, Sergio Melta, Zarko Orjakov, Charlie Villani, and Paul Wade. And up front, Eddie Krencevich, David Mitchell, John Cosmina, Frank Farina, Chris Kalantzis, Jimmy Patikas, Graham Arnold, Gary Cole, Peter Sharn, Mark Yankovic. So anyone I've missed out, please put your teams up on social media and I will tally the votes and I will get a vote as well. And I would like you to have a vote as well. We've got to come out of 11 with that because these are all wonderful players that when I was growing up, there was Kenny Bowden as well. I'm just looking at little ones I've put when I've run out of room. That was another one. There was Bugsy Niskus as well from Adelaide City. I remember him. He was a great defender. Maxwell, Stevie Maxwell.
So these are all players that you looked up to?
Mainly prominent from 1980 to 1990. So these are all players, like I said, that I would consider putting in the first 11. But if I've missed anyone out, please put them in your teams and I will tally up the votes.
So when you were growing up in the southwest of Sydney, each and every weekend... Yeah. There was an NSL game, probably one at Marconi and one at Sydney Croatia.
Well, no, Sydney Croatia didn't join the NSL. I think around 84. I think they come in
midstream. Yeah,
yeah, mid. It was Marconi. I'd go up to Marconi because my late grandmother and grandfather's house was out in Austral, which wasn't that far from Bosley Park. So I'd go with my late uncle, Uncle John. Who passed away, unfortunately, from multiple sclerosis. I'd go every Sunday, basically.
So you watch these guys
once every
around.
Week. Yeah, some great. I mean, the Marconi was a great team then.
Who's your favourite player?
Oh, I had so many.
You've got to name one.
Oh, one favourite player at that time. I used to really love Tony Henderson. And you know, and funny enough, my first ever concert I went to was a Bruce Springsteen concert, and I saw him there as well. So I thought that was like, you know. But there was like, you know, another goalkeeper as well, Alan Maher, who I used to train with. He was another one I would like to put in there as well.
So we'll put this up on the website and list the players and then stream them through,
Send them in, and then by the next time we'll come up with the 11. So just to let everyone know, everyone's got one vote. This is when I say everybody, all the fans, you know, for that. And I've got 10. That's only a joke. Everyone's got one vote. So I think that involving the fans, I think that's important because, you know, it's sometimes, especially with ex-players like myself, I think sometimes the votes can be tainted with personal bias. You know, like, for example, let's change the story. What about if I grew up in Adelaide and I trained with Adelaide City? Mm. I think my votes would be more... you know, going towards the Adelaide City players and so forth. So I'd like to hear from everybody. Another thing that we are going to do with Zach at the website as well, in the spirit of State of Origin, which everybody always talks about, it's one of the most popular sporting events in the whole of Australia, as we know, as it was, I talk about rugby league because we're from a rugby league state, as it was with AFL in the past as well, is that we're going to have, and this is what we're going to do on the website, we're going to have the state's best teams. So like a State of Origin. So, you know, Western Australia's best team ever, Northern Territory, and the territories, ACT, New South Wales, Victoria. I think that would be a good thing. And the reason I'm doing, like I said, because my first ever game that I can recall was New York Cosmos versus the Socceroos. So this is why I'm starting it from 79. So 80s to 90s, 90s to 2000s, 2000 to 2010, 2010 to 2020. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. Vote away. Your favourite players from the 80s, Socceroos, your best Socceroos 11 from the 80s.
Let me just read that. I was only joking. I wish people could see Adam's face right
there. You named about everyone that you've ever met right there. No, we'll put that full list up. And then even if those players, we've not mentioned someone that caught your eye during the 1980s, let us know. Let's get to some questions then.
We'll
rip through these ones. From William, one about Wellington. What do you make of Wellington's season so far?
William, I've said it time and time again, outstanding. And you know, it was about 3 or 4 years ago, Adam, you'll remember it quite vividly, where I was very upset with Wellington one day and I turned around and said, basically, you know, what did they give to the competition? And rightly so.
You wanted them out.
And rightly so. No, I just turned around and said, well, because I was just, you know, sick of them promising so much and delivering so little. Rightly so. Them and their supporters give it back to me, and good. And I was like, well, that is good. And since then, in my opinion, I've seen a market improvement. Now, the last two seasons have been absolutely outstanding. First of all, last season.
Are you taking credit in any way?
Well, every now and then somebody needs constructive criticism. Last season with Mark Rudin was an exceptional season. This season, and the reason I'm saying this season is even more exceptional, is twofold. Number one, because of the players they lost. You know, Roy Christian, Saprissa. I mean, any team in the world, you take out some good player. You know, I was talking before about, you know, take Mark Viduka out of the 2006 Australian side and look what happened in 2010. You know what I mean?
Kudo went as well, yeah.
Yeah. Twofold. Number one, the players they lost.
Mm.
And number two, the attractiveness of their football.
Yeah, it's great to
watch. You know, there was a time in the A-League where, you know, I used to always tell Ange this, you know, Postecoglou, that, you know, Ange being Ange, he's, you know, he's very, very humble, and he sort of he seemed like he was a bit embarrassed. But it was the truth. It's the exact truth. Used to, during that Brisbane Roar period, I'd pick up that, you know, my little app that you see me going on all the time and say, who's Brisbane playing? Where are they playing? Am I doing their game? Because it was just so good to watch, so enjoyable. And that's what Wellington, they haven't become Brisbane Roar yet, don't get me wrong, but it's a similar thing in terms of every week there's a certain few teams that I look for to see first of all. I look for all the teams, but and Wellington are one of those teams. And that's the first time in the history that I've known for the Wellington that they are one of those sides. So, like I said, for their sake as well, and everyone's sake, I'd love to see the season completed because of that.
Sebastian has asked a question about the Olympics. They're making the Olympic Games. How important is that twofold for a player and also for the betterment of the senior national team going forward?
For the betterment of the senior national team, that's debatable. It really is, and I'll tell you why. From the positive point of view, you would say yes, it's another stepping stone for them to then, you know, to go on. And if you look throughout history, teams that have done well in the younger age groups, 17s, 20s, and Olympics, then generally tend to have a very good team going forward. But from the other side, it's not as important as the World Cup. Yep. Okay, so there have been also countless players and teams that have done really well at Olympic level, and all of a sudden, you don't see them or hear of them again as well. So that one is debatable. In terms of the young players' progression, and especially those ones that are playing in the A-League, it's hugely important. It's such a great thing to be involved with. It's another chance to get onto the world stage. There will be a countless amount of people watching. And I don't mean fans in this, I mean scouts and so forth.
You went to 92?
92, Barcelona, yeah.
Did you go to any other sports when you were there?
I went to watch the Dream Team play Croatia in the final of the basketball.
Oh, yeah. Who are you supporting?
Well, Croatia, obviously, up until they were losing by about 30, then I just...
10 minutes in.
Turned the flag around. the Dream Team were exactly what they sounded like. Adam, they're running up to the basket, throwing against the backboard, and somebody was coming back and dunking. It was like, they made things look so easy. But the Croatian team, and especially because Croatia had just become an independent country I think it was 12 months earlier. They did so well to get to the final as well. And they had some great players as well. I mean, Dražen Petrović, who passed away in that horrible car crash. I mean, he was a fantastic player. Some other players as well were, you know, Tony Kukoc and all that were fantastic players. The Olympics is a wonderful experience. And it shouldn't be missed, really, for all those young players, like I said to you. There are no players... at this moment in time, correct me if I'm wrong, who are in a position maybe, if just say, for example, we had a young, I don't know, we just say, for example, we had a young, oh, we had a young Mark Bosnich who was playing at that time for a big club, and he was number one goalkeeper, and the Olympics come up and the club was making it very difficult for him to go and turn up for the Olympics in terms of saying, well, it's not official FIFA dates and we want you here and you could lose your place if you go. If that was to occur, say if it was, say, Matty Ryan or whatever, and Matty Ryan, say, turned around, hypothetically, he wouldn't, but, let's keep it to me. If I turned around, young Mark Bosnich turned around and said, look, listen, I dearly love to play for Australia, but this is my livelihood and it's making it so difficult, you know, I would hope that people would understand, that they wouldn't turn around and just start saying, oh, it's for playing for Australia.
Oh, no, you'd cop it.
Well, I know, but that's what I would hope. People have come to the point where they would completely understand, you know, because the bottom line is...
Well, you copped it when you turned down...
Yeah, big style. So that's why I'm trying to give that situation because, you know, from my personal point of view, if you're under that type of pressure, and back then, remember, there was no FIFA windows, yeah? And I would never, Adam. I mean, I very rarely say never, you know that, because I don't like to say never, right? But I would never turn around. If I'd lost my place... and was out of the team and all of a sudden it just went pear-shaped from them. I would never turn around to the federation and say, all right, I want compensation because you brought me out, so I want you to pay me £2 million for each year that I missed out like that. So that's the sort of thing that you've got to take into consideration. It's become much easier because there are FIFA windows. But with the Olympics, like I said to you, that's the only little caveat that I'd love to place. If it was, say, for example, even an overage player.
Yeah.
If it was going to make it very, very difficult for an overage player, because it as Olympics are so, so important for the younger players. See, for me personally, I wouldn't pick overage players. I'd let all the young players under 23s play in those Olympics.
If it was to the detriment of the overall possibility of getting as far as you could at the Olympics?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think that's part of the development coming up. I think it should be a wholly under-23 tournament. Obviously, they've allowed those overage players to make it more of a spectacle, to draw in more viewers and more crowds to the thing. That's why they've allowed that. So then, you know, players maybe... different. Look, players coming towards the end of their career, you know, different story. So if it's like a, you know, say, just say for example, a Neymar, one, you know, he's already played for Brazil, but just say when he was like, say, a little bit older and he'd like to come back, okay. But I would hate, me personally, that's only me personally, by the way, for me to be taking away the opportunity of a younger player, because it's very, very important for them. So yeah, if I was like 39 and I said, I haven't played in the Olympics, I'd like to come back. Oh, what? So a young...
Tom Glover
had to miss out because you wanted to come back. I don't like that.
One from Paul Guerrero, quick one. The 91 Youth World Cup, did you expect to go as far as you did in that time? You finished fourth.
Yeah, we did. We finished fourth. We lost the third and fourth playoff to Russia on penalties. Well, it was, I think it was the CIS then, but Russia, right? Soviet Union. I did, yeah. I really thought that we could. I thought that the most important thing, a little bit a la 2006, was that opening game against Trinidad Tobago, who Dwight York was playing with, so that was hilarious. You never heard the end of that. And I thought once we won that, I thought we could get minimum to the semi-finals, you know. And although the semi-finals, the way things were cut up, we were due to meet Portugal. I knew it was going to be very difficult with them having, you know, Luis Figo and Rui Costa, and Carlos Queiroz was the coach, and they would have the backing of 110,000 supporters. I thought that would make it very difficult, but we did really well, and we only lost 1-0 in the end to a cracker from Rui Costa. But yeah, I did. I really did. And that's another thing as well that I want people, because Juno's 80s, there was another youth tournament, which was very important for me anyway, for my love of football, was the 1981 World Youth Cup. And that was absolutely fantastic as well. I'll talk about that one day as well.
Yeah, exactly. And like, there was things going around on Twitter about the 93 Youth World Championships.
Correct, that was 2 years later. Yeah, that was 2 years later, yeah. A couple of
questions from a guy called Dragan. There's one on... how do you lower grassroots fees? I don't think we've got the time to do it justice right now, but we will get into
I will say there's not a moment that goes by. Yeah, there's not a moment that goes by where I don't think that. But there is a gentleman who was quite prominent, and we know him very well, Louis Arcuri, you know, who represented all the fans, is a lawyer by trade, represented all the fans during the appeals process, and he's been working on something for 3 years, he told me, and hopefully one day, either when this is all over or when we can manage to get him, he's involved with a club here in Sydney called Rydalmere, to get him maybe to speak about some of his ideas.
Yeah, and there's a range of discussion points in that very topic, so we won't get into it now, but we will in the coming weeks. He did have another one, though. Have you ever broken quarantine? Getting in to the realm of Kyle Walker.
Not quarantine, but I'll put it this way. I'll give you one story when we were young kids. All right, so when we were young kids at Manchester United, and I was actually injured at the time. And
for those of you who don't know, just to jump in, you went to Manchester United when
1988,
you were 16.
Yeah, 16, yeah.
16 years
old. So I'd arranged to go out, funny enough, with Darren Ferguson, Sir Alex's son, and a couple of the other boys, just to play snooker and all that. And we got in after 12 o'clock.
Just to play snooker.
Now, I was in the digs with three boys from Northern Ireland, who were lovely lads until they had a few to drink and they started arguing about things, but that's another story altogether. But lovely, lovely lads. Alan McGreevy, Pete Smythe, and the late Adrian Doherty, who was a fantastic player. And that's another story as well.
Yeah.
You know, he passed away, poor thing. And we used to always have a system where we'd leave the key on the top of the front door. Well, those dimwits, right, forgot to leave the key for the bozo, right? So I had to climb on top of my roof, and it was freezing cold. It was around, I think it was around December. Yeah.
Yep.
And I had to climb on top of my roof. On top of my roof to get into my window, which always left open just in case, contingency, right? But as I was climbing, because it was freezing, my foot sort of slipped a little bit on the black ice and knocked down the guttering. Not all of it, but enough of it. So rightly so, the landlady went nuts, 100%, and obviously rang Sir Alex Ferguson, and he got me in the office straight away first thing. And the there's a footnote to this story which you're going to laugh even more about, Adam. So anyway, so he was going absolutely nuts, and he was demanding names, but I wouldn't tell him because because he was going, "What's my son?" I said, "No, it's not up for me to tell other people's names. I will not give names whatsoever." He goes, "Well, fine, no problem." He goes, "You're suspended. Get your clothes off. Get off the training ground until further notice." Right. And the other thing he turned around and said, this was a classic as well, Adam, right? He turned around and said, "You know, what time did you get in? I heard it was 2 o'clock in the morning." I went, "No, it wasn't." He goes, "Well, what time was it?" I went, "Well, 1:50. So then he started going like nuts again and this, that, and the other. And when my father left...
Why were you being a smartass to Sir Alex Ferguson?
It wasn't 2 o'clock. It was 1:50.
Was being a smartass.
But one of the worst things I think... Look, my dad, for me, is great. If I listened to him more, I wouldn't have gotten half the trouble I did. One of the mistakes, in my opinion, he made was when he left me in charge of Sir Alex at 16, he said, if he gets out... My dad told Sir Alex, if he gets out of line, just give him a whack across the head. In front, like, yeah. So... Fergie used to do this all the time. You know, even when I was at, you know, at lunch and all that, he'd come and whack me across the head and I go, well, what was that for? He'd go, just in case you're thinking about doing something. Right? So, of course, he'd give me a whack across the head, get off the training ground. This is the footnote to the story. The next day, my parents and sister were arriving, fully paid by Manchester United, to Manchester. So, of course, then the next morning, I'm at the airport to pick him up. Hey, he's gone, this, that, and the other. Very good. How's everything good? We're in the car on the way back, you know. So what's happening? You know, what's going on? I had to tell him that. Well, yeah, as soon as we got to the stop sign, I copped another thickhead from Dad on the back of the car. So there you go. So moral to the story is, listen, guys, just listen. Yeah, it's not worth it.
Yeah, it's not worth it. No. It's not worth it. Great story. Magic Milos, best moment in the Premier League you've witnessed, either as a player or...
Witnessed? Milos,
or as a fan? Just watched. It can be on TV.
There's been so many.
If you're on the ground,
witness
the ground.
Yeah, me playing or involved, or just witness myself.
Well, give us two. Your greatest moment surely is the day that you won the Premier League.
Yeah, that's definitely. Yeah, most definitely.
Okay. When we had the rights, dear old days.
Yeah, great moments. Oh, look,
the one that stands out for me.
Yeah, live. You know, in terms of, let's go as a witness. That's a little bit more interesting than rather just something from my perspective, Milos. So, from a live perspective, and this, I mean, there was so many moments, but a couple stand out. Villa Park, second leg, Arsenal versus Manchester United, 1999 FA Cup semi-final. Ryan Giggs scoring that goal. I mean, that was amazing. I can't tell you.
Took your shirt off.
Yeah, he did, but it was absolutely amazing because in the first leg, it was 0-0. And he got a lot of stick, especially from the Manchester United supporters as well, a lot of stick. And to see him do that, because I knew him from a young kid, was absolutely amazing. From a Premier League perspective, you know, so you could say, watching on TV and so forth, pretty hard not to go against Sergio Aguero scoring that winner against QPR.
We were in the studio that one.
Yeah, Milos, I mean, I don't know, when you're listening to this or anyone else is listening to this, just go on YouTube tonight and have it. I still get tingles down my back. That was absolutely amazing. You can remember that night we're on, Adam, because remember, you know, we're going, well, you know, we're going to have to, when we're walking back, because obviously we used to walk back around 80, remember I say always 87.30, yeah. And, you know, 42.30, we always go to go back on
well, we went,
stage.
I remember it this one, because we waited until as long as we could, because we had the two TVs up, the Manchester United game at Sunderland and also the Manchester City game at home, the QPR.
Yeah.
We were watching that ridiculous thing play out at Etihad with Joey Barton getting sent off and QPR somehow doing what they did.
At this moment in time, remember, we were walking, it was at the old building, so people don't know, Fox used to be in Piermont, you know, just across the way from here. Now we're in Artarmon, which is across the bridge. So when you walk through that old building, you had TVs as you're walking across all the rooms, you could see. We were walking from 87, I think it was 87.30, right? Because it was 2-1 for QPR. And I remember you were saying as well, as you normally do when you tell us and all Robbie and I, because you know you're so professional and you know what to do in this, you know, not to be too, you know, there's going to be some very upset people and to be understandable and this, that and the other. All of a sudden as we're walking, remember, Dzeko scores that equaliser.
Yeah.
And then we're sitting down and then the floor manager comes over and the sound people, they start fixing up everything, the makeup lady's starting to put on and all that. And then, and I'm still getting tingles now, it goes down to see, that was just, for me, that was just amazing, absolutely amazing just to see that. It's you know, but there are so many, and you know, we'll go through that another, I'll do a top 10, that doesn't do it justice, but there was so many moments. You know, and witnessing as well, and live as well, where it was just unbelievable.
A quick couple ones on keepers. Yeah. So one gentleman, I think Neil Harper's asked, the best young Australian keeper at the moment?
Well, Tom Glover.
Tommy Glover.
Yeah, Glover, yeah.
Outstanding. Yusuf has asked, the best A-League keeper this season and of all time?
Oh, okay. Best A-League keeper this season, I think you have to say... is the boy at Wellington, Marinovic. He's been outstanding. Let's go through them all. Make sure I get my tables.
Dead air. Now, yeah. the podcast
first,
is still
the
going.
He's the first one that comes to mind, but let me just go on my famous phone.
Well, let's go down the list. Redmayne at Sydney FC.
Outstanding. He's been outstanding as well. He's mentioned he's Marinovic. Be up there.
It's Perth at Liam Reddy.
Yeah, Jamie Young's been outstanding. Tommy Glover's been outstanding. You know my feelings on him. Liam Reddy's been really good too. Curto has been good, although he had a few moments. You know, like at the beginning, he was outstanding.
Izzo at Adelaide.
Izzo's been in and out, but they're all very good goalkeepers. We've always had produced excellent goalkeepers. Here we go. Western Sydney Wanderers, Lopar. I mean, he was a goalkeeper of the season at the start. He's right up there. Lopar's up there with, I have to say, Marinovic. Newcastle Jets, well,
Moss Italiano. Played,
but Italiano, he's been good since he's come in. Lawrence Thomas, consistent as ever. Mark Birigidi, he's made the most saves more than anyone, but he's playing in the team to come. So I would say Marinovic and Lopar.
Okay.
And of all time, I think you have to, of all time, you have to look at what people have won. So in that case, I think you have to say Michael Theo.
Scott has asked, what's the best sports movie of all time and why is it Happy Gilmore? So he's obviously a fan of Happy Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore. Oh, well, I don't... Scott, I'm going to go watch Happy Gilmore because I haven't watched it. Is that the one you told me? Yeah, well, I will. I know, but you know what Bozo's like. He watches the majority of things, but there's some things he doesn't. He leaves. He leaves. That's the one where you told me where he comes up to the golf tee. He takes a big...
Yeah.
Like he's charging a spinner.
Yeah, no, he goes up and smashes the cup out of the
ball. I will go for you and watch that one.
But you will like one line in particular where his caddy, I forget who the caddy was at the time, and he missed a putt. He just goes up to him and goes, where were you on that one, dipshit?
Yeah. But best sports films for me, I mean, you know, some people might actually say, what about this one? I might go, oh, you're right. But see, off the top of my head, the most influential, the best ones for me growing up were the Rocky films.
Oh, there you go.
And Escape to Victory.
Okay.
I mean, Escape to Victory, that was, you know.
Well, my favourite... I don't know if you've seen it. If you haven't seen Happy Gilmore, I don't see how you've seen this. White Man Can't Jump.
Oh, that was good.
You've seen it?
That was good.
Yeah, that's my favourite. Just but for the sledging.
Yeah, but I can jump. It's a little joke, buddy.
Anymore?
I'm sure people will say, Boz, what about this one? I'll go, oh, yeah, that's a good point and this, that. Yeah, but I love my films, you know. But see, my films, like I said, played the most influential part on me were films like The Magnificent Seven, you know, the original one, you know, with Yul Brynner and Steve McQueen.
All the war movies as well.
Charles Bronson and all that.
Saving Private Ryan.
The Great Escape. Yeah, Saving Private Ryan. There's a story to that one, which you'll tell in a couple of weeks when I'm ready. The Great Escape. You know, Errol Flynn, The Adventures of Robin Hood. I mean, when I was growing up, those were like unbelievable films. You know, The Godfather Trilogy.
Errol Flynn.
Once Upon a Time in America. You know, there were so many great films, you know, that we've seen over the years.
Errol Flynn's life is more interesting than any movie he's been in.
I don't know about that, but now you've told me, I'm going to go read immediately. Yeah, but I'm just saying because the ones that people know which Robin Hood it was, you know what I mean? So if I said Robin Hood, some people might think, well, do you mean the one with Kevin Costner? Do you mean the one? I'm just talking about when I was growing up. Those are the ones on the old, I think it was Saturday night or Friday night. Mm. I think the late Bill Collins used to have those movie nights. I'd record them, Adam. Yeah,
Errol Flynn, I've got to get this away. It was reported that he slept with 10,000 women.
Right, okay.
Hence the expression, in like Flynn.
Oh, okay, fair enough. I didn't know that, but I was just thinking about his arrow shooting in that...
You could put it that way.
In that tournament, you know, when he split the arrow, that went right in the middle. That's all I was thinking about.
Well, yeah. truth is stranger than fiction sometimes. We're just about wrapping up. Quick one, pineapple on a pizza from Wandering Simo. Does it belong?
Not really, I don't think so.
I don't mind it.
I don't mind it. I pretty honest, I'll probably take them off. I don't really, for me, the traditional pizza of just the normal pizza base made with flour and water, the simple, and some yeast, with some tomatoes either you know, juiced up or passata on the bottom, mozzarella cheese. If you want to put a bit of ham on, it's up to you. But that, for me, that's the best pizza ever. That's it. That's when you start putting too many toppings on, that's where you get yourself into trouble.
Anything else, Guy Grossi? last one from Stephen Curry, or Cooney, maybe. I can't even read my own writing. I've scribbled this down. An Iran story. In Iran.
There's no real stories to go from Ramah.
Because you were only there for 48 hours.
Yeah, we flew in from Dubai.
This is 1997.
Yeah, exactly. Other than the crowd was phenomenal. The people that we met were absolutely phenomenal. The only little story I could say probably is, which was education, but fair enough, that's not a problem. I'm a great believer. If I come into your house, that's your rules. If you tell me not to go into a certain room, that's your rules. Simple as that. So it was rather warm. Like when I say rather warm, it was about, you know, coming from England, you know, it was around, I think it would have been around November time. Yes. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong.
November.
So it was around about, you know, 19, 20, like, you know, and coming from like, you know, 3 or 4, that was like, so we were coming down one day in the elevator for dinner. And I had my tracksuit pants on, but because it was warm, I just pulled them up, you know, just below my knees as I come on. And as I got off on the ground floor, I had 4 of these guys sprint up to me. I thought, what's going on here? I thought it was like, this is a raid, like whatever. They went, put your pants down. You're not allowed to do that in our country. I said, I'm really sorry. I didn't realize. I said, that's the only story. I didn't realize. I apologize. I'll put them down. It won't happen again. That's all. Yeah, that's all. When they run to me, 4 of them from 4 directions, I'd have thought that, or the boys had maybe sort of, you know, sometimes when you play practical jokes, you know, but the boys had, you know, sort of arranged for, like, you know, for this joke to be played. And I was like, but then I was like, no problem. And that's okay. It's their country and it's no problem. But the people that I come across there were absolutely fantastic.
Imagine that. We tuned into the first leg. Mark Boston's not playing today. He's been apprehended by the Republican Guard for wearing shorts in a foyer.
Well, like I said, it was my bad. It was my ignorance. I should have known about it. I didn't, because I only just got in there, whatever. But I did know about it. No problem. You know, no problem. But
it was the least of our worries.
They
2 weeks
me,
later.
They told me in a firm way. No worries. Yeah. The funny thing was, obviously it wasn't for them, was when they run from 4, like, can you imagine 4 directions? I just got off the airplane. I was like, oh, what happened here?
Great stories, Boz. Thank you again for your company over the last hour. I hope you enjoyed listening to the Fox Football Podcast. Plenty more stories from Boz. Those teams, the Socceroos 80s team, get thinking and choose your best one, and Boz will choose his best one and release it when we next sit down for another chat. Boz, stay safe.
Thank you so much, Adam, and you stay safe, and everyone who's listening out there, please stay safe. And look after that little one, that little Nyla, for us.
Will do. Thanks for listening. Football will be back soon.